played that for a long time. And the Beatles were suggested by Jean-Ann Goodbrand, thanks Jean-Ann, Brown Trout, Merlin's Bay, and Karina Taylor, amongst, or Lee Morris, there you go, you get in as well. Choosing the Beatles ticket to ride more from our train playlist, and then Michael Portillo after six. Now, yesterday on the programme, Simon Pegg was on, talking about the new Steven Spielberg blockbuster, which is, as you know, Ready Player One.
It's basically a film set in the not-too-distant future, and the not-too-unlikely future, it has to be said, where the world has become obsessed with a sort of virtual reality game stroke way of being, which is to disappear off into a completely fake world where you can be whoever you want, whenever you want, in whatever situation you want to be in. And it's become a sort of place where people go to hide from the real world, really.
Simon Pegg talking about virtual reality, which has, of course, you know, VR's been around for a long time. Is it about to become extremely common? Is it about to be science fact? A lot of people would like it to be, because it could be very exciting. Here is a professor of computer graphics and virtual environments at Glasgow School of Art. He's Paul Chapman. He knows, you know. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Simon.
You're the guy for us. Okay. So I don't suppose you've seen this film yet?
No, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
You're going to be very excited. It'll be just like going to work, though, however. So, for just in case people haven't clocked this and haven't put on the goggles, what is it? What happens when you put on the headset? What are we talking about?
Okay, so virtual reality is all about sort of complete immersion into another world. And if any of the listeners haven't experienced it, they may remember the old Viewmasters. Do you remember those red things from the 80s that used to put up to your head and a little slider thing on the right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. And then you had a lever down the side and it was like a 3D image, wasn't it?
That's right. So that's a type of immersive environment.
Great, yes.
And believe it or not, that's actually been around since the 1860s. And they were sort of the Xbox of the day. And you had sort of beautiful photographs in 3D that you could experience.
That's right. I had a Viewmaster. You used to go on safari with your Viewmaster, of course. I hadn't thought it was like that, but of course you're right.
Absolutely. So it's quite old technology. They sort of died out when the moving pictures came out later on in the 19th century. But then sort of in the 1960s, you had someone like Van Sutherland doing a lot of research into helmet-mounted displays. He did some incredibly groundbreaking work. And sort of virtual reality has just got better and better. But it's had a few false starts as well, unfortunately.
Okay, so does that mean people might dismiss it and say, oh, yeah, we've been here before, and then not realise when it's about to happen?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, do you remember a film back in the 90s called, it was The Lawnmower Man?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think it was a film based on a book by Stephen King. It wasn't a great film, but it's sort of all about really making the general public aware of virtual reality. I think it starred Pierce Brosnan, the old James Bond chap, but it really made everyone really excited about VR. And what happened was all the press and media rushed to all the universities and said, show us your virtual reality. And unfortunately, back then, virtual reality and the computers really weren't up to it, so they were quite disappointed with what they saw, because it was nothing like the film.
But now, obviously the technology is catching up, and tell us what you think the main applications of this... I mean, obviously, the film is about gaming, but what do you think is going to be... You know, once we get the headset, what are we going to be spending most of our time doing with VR?
Well, I mean, gaming is the obvious one, but there's a whole sort of plethora of areas that we can use virtual reality very effectively for. So education is an obvious one. So students, you know, we can take students to the moon or to the bottom of the ocean or take them to the Great Wall of China or wherever they want to go. And it's much more immersive. It's a much better learning experience for people rather than looking at, say, for example, traditional photographs or two-dimensional photographs in textbooks.
Yeah, so and presumably surgeons could learn to operate, or, you know, everything would become that much more real.
No, yeah, absolutely. And at Glasgow School of Art, we're doing a lot of work in medical visualization there. We've been developing a very accurate three-dimensional model of the human body. And for medics, the head and neck is very complex human anatomy. So rather than, again, looking at two-dimensional photographs in books, we're able to actually literally dive inside the body, pull parts of the skull apart, move eyes around, and actually have a much better understanding of human anatomy, because we live in a three-dimensional world. So if we can interact with it in 3D, it's so much better.
Might it be the next way of experiencing a movie or watching live sport? You know, if you're watching Wimbledon, if you're watching the rugby or the cup final or something like that, might that be a pretty extraordinary way of experiencing that?
Well, you can do that now, Simon. So you can actually watch basketball matches or boxing matches. If you can record it with a left and a right eye, so two cameras, then you can experience it in an immersive environment. So you can buy something like Google Cardboard or things like that. Use your mobile phone because the display technology has improved drastically in the last 10, 15 years. And you can actually experience the boxing match or the basketball firsthand. So, yeah, I mean, the technology is really, really improving.
And presumably people will have to be careful. I mean, once it becomes easy, once it becomes cheap and everyone can do it, because it is so powerful and because it is so immersive, presumably there need to be some guidelines. You know, you could imagine small kids putting on a headset would find, in fact, grown-ups, if they're watching a horror movie or something, would find it pretty terrifying.
Yeah, when you play let's say a horror game or in virtual reality, it's so much more immersive. It really is so much more frightening. But I think you need to be very careful with immersive technologies as well in virtual reality, because certainly with young children, it's just where their brains are developing. So we don't want to be putting HMDs on them for any periods of time. In fact, they'll probably want to. I remember myself as a child never wanting to turn the computer off. So there does need to be guidelines there for people. Absolutely.
What's an HMD?
Sorry, a helmet-mounted display. So your main sort of sensory input, virtual reality is all about fooling the senses. So obviously hearing, touch, sight, taste and smell. Taste and smell is too difficult. We kind of left that one. But your main sensory input is really sort of the visual. So the helmet-mounted display provides the visuals to you that the computer can control.
And I wonder if live music would be another particularly exciting use of virtual reality. You know, if you can't get to see the concert that you've always wanted to go to, or if your favorite band are opening in New York, if you can actually feel as though you're there, just right on the front row, that would be extraordinary, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. You can pay for the best seats in the house, and not only that, you can sit next to your friends from another country.
Wow. Okay. Well, this is getting very exciting. So, how much would it cost? What's kind of entry level VR? Professor, what would I have to spend?
Well, it's interesting, because if you think back to sort of the 1990s, I was at Georgia Tech for a little bit and experienced their VR equipment, which was absolutely state-of-the-art, and that was extremely, extremely expensive. If you look at the kit now, it's so much cheaper. It's you can buy a good helmet-mounted display. We could buy a really cheap one for 15 quid, you know, Google Cardboard, for example, but then you need to just slot your mobile phone into it. But that's kind of a limited virtual reality. If you want better sort of motion, tracked helmet-mounted displays, they're going to be a bit more expensive, but they're going to be around sort of £600-700, and then you need a reasonably good computer to drive that. But because the games industry is so huge now, that's actually massively reduced the cost of these computers, because in the early 90s, these computers used to cost a fortune.
Fascinating stuff.
And much, much cheaper now.
Paul, thank you very much indeed for your time. A glimpse into the future, but maybe the future being next weekend. But we appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
There you go. There's Professor Paul Chapman, head of the School of Simulation and Visualization at Glasgow School of Art. There you go. Everything you needed to know about.